right club. Be the right club today.
Yeah. Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most.
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Got a little change of pace for you today. I get a lot of feedback from people saying they want to hear gambling stories. You know, some of the pros that we've had on are a little bit hesitant to name dollar amounts or tell the really, really good gambling stories. So I went a little outside the box, had somebody from Daniel Negreanu's camp reach out and suggest that we have Daniel on. He gets to a little bit of his background, but just to touch on it here, he's a professional poker player, maybe the most famous professional poker player in the world, not named Phil Hellmuth. Has had an unbelievable career, and he's going to touch on that, and lives a gambling lifestyle, and also plays some golf, and bets a ton of money doing it in the process, and he names the actual numbers, and talks a lot about the actual crazy bets that he's made. So to tie this in, this integration was almost too easy to talk about the Suits Truvis golf balls from Callaway. They have the spades, clubs, hearts, and diamonds. These are what I play exclusively now. So what I'll do is I'll usually start with the spades. Those are my favorite. And as soon as I hit one in the water, I'll switch up suits and continue that cycle until I'm probably all the way through a dozen. I've been talking a bit about this on the Refuge, just about how much they've helped my putting. I don't know why. I think it's just because I don't have to see a line rolling end over end, and I don't have to see how off center a lot of my putts are. Every putt that I hit looks really perfect. It's probably not, but it looks that way. It feels a lot more like you're kicking a soccer ball than it does rolling a golf ball. And I have no idea why that works. I actually hit a couple putts with some non-Truvis balls last week in Reno, and the results were pretty shaky. So I'm totally sold on these things. You can go to CallawayGolf.com. It's the same same Chrome Soft golf ball that you know and love. And you can get, you buy a dozen and it gives you a sleeve of each suit. So please, I promise, do that. You will not regret it. Just give it a try. You know, if you know somebody or see somebody with the Truvis balls, just give them a try. I promise this is not a gimmick. I thought it was a gimmick when they came out, but they have honestly helped me so much with my game. So without much further delay, again, we're going to talk some poker here with Daniel. I thought it's important to set the scene, and hopefully there are some poker fans out there that know and are familiar with Daniel and some of his stories. So we're going to talk some of that, and then the rest of the time we are going to talk golf, and then it comes back around a little bit to poker at the end. But I do hope this is worth your time, and thank you very much for tuning in. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We're going a bit outside the box with this one. This is something I've always been intrigued to do with professional poker player, maybe the professional poker player, Mr. Daniel Negreanu. Daniel, are you curious as to what you're doing on a golf podcast, or do you know what you're doing here?
I think I know what I'm doing, because poker, gambling, golf all sort of go hand in hand to a certain degree.
Without a doubt. And I kind of do want to tap into that gambling mentality, because I know I've heard some stories about you on the golf course and, you know, kind of the level of play that some of the games you get yourself in. But and for the listeners at home, I promise we will bring this around to golf, but I want to kind of set the scene some with poker. I mean, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are familiar with you, but in case they aren't, kind of give us your background in poker and what your career has been like to this point.
Well, I'm 45 as of a few days ago, and I was inducted into the Hall of Fame as early as you can, a first ballot, when I was age 40. I was the all-time money leader in poker history for most of my career. I've won World Series Poker Player of the Year twice, 6 gold bracelets, over $40 million in earnings in tournament poker, and lots of other stuff. So yeah, I've had a very good poker career, and you know, my golf results are a lot less illustrious.
I was gonna say, you probably don't have a resume that you could just spout off with golf like you do there. But first of all, let's start with an easy transition. Like, what are kind of the similarities and differences between, for yourself, I mean, you're obviously a professional at poker and one of the best ever at it. How does that at all translate into golf? And what's that like, kind of a sport that you're not the best at? And how do you kind of balance how you gamble on the golf course?
So first and foremost, there are so many similarities in terms of like what happens to you mentally in poker tournaments and in golf tournaments. So when you hit a bad golf shot, right, where you really mess up and you screwed up and you put yourself in a bad spot, the question is, what happens next? In poker, we call it tilt. Let's say you get pocket aces. You go all in, you know, or you make a mistake or something like that, and somebody beats you with a 9 and a 4, and it drives you crazy. If you're still thinking about that poker hand, like an hour later or 2 hours later, you're done. because you're not focused on what you need to be doing. I would imagine the same is true. I remember Tiger Woods was quoted once as saying, you know, because he was attacking putts, his first putt, pretty aggressively. And people were like, how can you, you know, attack your, why are you doing that? And you're leaving yourself like 5-6 feet back on the second putt. He's like, I'm not thinking about the next putt. You know, he's focused on the putt at hand. And I think those that have the mental ability to, especially in the crunch, like in a major, right? On, you know, on the final round, you're up by two. And all of a sudden, you're just, you know, you got to keep your head straight on, you know, what you got to be doing here and not overthinking things. In both, well, endeavors, poker and golf, mental fortitude is like super important.
Well, how did you get into poker? Like, what was the beginning of your career like? And I'm curious to kind of hear how the world of poker has changed really in the television era in the last couple decades.
Well, I started as a teenager as a snooker player, which is part of the reason I'm arguably the best putter in the world right now in golf. I'm top five.
Who is arguing this?
Tiger Woods tried to claim that he was better than me, and I told him I don't think so, but you know, we could prove it on the course. We never ended up doing that. I started playing pool, and then through that met some people who played poker, played in some underground games and things like that, and then started taking more seriously, and then made the move to Las Vegas, which was the hotbed for poker at the time.
Well, did you have success right away in poker? I guess, how did you kind of hone your skills and develop into what you eventually became as a poker player?
Like with anything, right? Like, how many people would go out and golf for the first time and be really good at it, right? So I wasn't very good at poker in the beginning, but I was a quick study, and I was engaged, and I've always been a very competitive person. So I started to like work hard and study what other people were doing and what was working. And, you know, within a few months, I was beating the game that I was in, you know, started in Toronto. And then, of course, when I made the trip to Las Vegas, you know, I was like a hometown hero, and they've seen, you know, hundreds of those come through town. And so, as expected, you know, I got my butt kicked by the actual, you know, top players, and had to go back to Toronto, rebuild my bankroll, and, you know, kept going back until finally the light bulb went off, and I was able to make some adjustments and start winning.
I was curious if there ever was there a time, maybe it's in that initial trip to Vegas, or maybe as you're emerging into being a really good winning player, was there ever a time where you looked down at a particular hand, maybe in a cash game, and you're like, holy shit, I am playing for way too much money right now? Was there ever a moment, because right now, you know, hearing kind of the money that you throw around on the golf course, it doesn't seem to faze you much, but there was a time in your life, I would imagine, that wasn't always the case.
Oh, there were countless times where I'd be at the Mirage, which is where the center of the poker world was for, you know, in the late 90s, and, you know, have all my money on the table. And I remember one morning I woke up with just $600, and I went to go play $20 and $40 limits, which is way higher than you should play with only $600. And I remember within an hour I lost like 512 of it. So I had like 82 bucks left. And I was like, screw this. They're not going to bust me in this game. So I took my 80 bucks and I went to go play $1 to $5 seven stud with nobody under 70 years old, right? And I won like 100 bucks in that game. So now I've got about 182. Now I say, let's kick it up and go to $6, $12. And this is all in the same day. I win another 100. I got 286. I'm like, you know what? Let's give 10-20 a try. I win about 400 in the 10-20. So now I'm back to 686. I'm like, let's go back to that 20-40 game. I win about 2,000 in the 20-40 game. I never played 40-80, which was a higher limit, at the highest limit at the time. And I said, screw it, let's go. So I turned that $82, which I didn't quit on, and turned it into 6,000 by the end of the night.
And what was your first, I guess, big tournament winning? And what was that like?
Well, I think, I mean, I had, you know, there's always different scale, right, for like big. Because when I was in Toronto, you know, 19,000 was big. But the first big one that sort of put me on the map was in 1998, and it was the first ever World Series of Poker event I'd ever played. And I jumped in there, you know, and was able to go all the way and win like 100, what was it, like two, how much was it, 180,000 at the time, which didn't last very long, but you know, it was a good score.
Do you have like good years in poker like you do, like good and bad years in poker like you would in golf? Does it vary a lot from year to year?
Oh, even more so than golf. Like, listen, if you're a top 10 golfer, you're going to put up results regardless. Like, there is some luck in golf, but nowhere near as much luck as there is in poker tournaments. You can be a good player, you know, a winning player, and play well all year and still have a losing year. You know, that's doable. I did it about 2-3 years ago. I had like a very small losing year. Well, small relative, like $70,000 or $80,000. The year before I won like 2.5 million. The year after I won 1.7 million. So, in short term, luck plays a big role. So, you know, and that's one of the things, that's one of the reasons that it requires such like mental strength and fortitude. I think any poker player would benefit from playing golf, and any golfer would benefit from dealing with like bad luck at poker.
Yeah, I've always absolutely loved poker. I think I got kind of swept up in it right during that TV boom era in the early 2000s. Did that help? Like for a player like yourself who was already established at that point, did that TV boom bring a lot more people to Vegas ready to play? And did you just start sweeping up at that moment?
Well, yeah, it made the tournaments huge, you know, yeah. Like tournaments that might have seen maybe 30, 40 people now ballooned to like 400 or 500, you know, overnight because of, you know, the televised product. And, you know, then all the other opportunities came in, sponsorship opportunities. If you were a prominent name in the game, you know, there was online companies spending money and, you know, so there's a lot of different ways that money just flew in during that boom.
So when did you pick up a golf club for the first time? Were you always a golfer, or is this kind of just the way I've always understood it is, you know, you guys love to gamble on pretty much anything. And that was one more thing to gamble on. And a lot of poker players end up taking up golf later in life than most of us that have played it a long time. Is that the case?
Oh yeah. Like, I don't think I started until I was about 30 or 31 years old, right around that time. And I didn't get a coach or anything like that. And I developed, I think, the flattest swing possible. Like, I basically tried to, it's really pathetic. I wish I could show you how ridiculous it was. But I tried to keep my left arm straight the whole time, never move it, which, you know, doesn't sound all that bad, but that's it. And then just come through. And what do you know? Like, it hurt my back a little bit too, because I was just not swinging. My form was pretty bad. But after a while, you know, once we started gambling bigger, I realized, yeah, I might need to get, you know, better at this game.
Was it a bet that brought you into it, or did you start losing right away and learn pretty quickly that you needed to improve to make money on the course?
Well, at the very beginning, it was just a couple friends, you know, who were like, let's try golf. I'm like, okay, cool. But, you know, pretty shortly after that, you know, once I started to get a little bit better, you know, gambling became a big part of it. And at that point, I didn't have coaching. And I remember one time going up to the tee, and all the old hustlers came out for this because, you know, poker players who golf, nobody has a handicap. They all tell you what they shoot about. Oh, I shoot about 90. You know, I'm about a bogey golfer. I played against a guy who was a bogey golfer, Mike Sexton. He shot 75. I don't know how many bogey golfers that had three. He birdied 4, 5, and 6 on the way to a smooth 75. And you know, I played 4 times in a row. I played with a guy who had the best round of his life. You know, it's like, this seems like coincidental. And I remember just going up to the first tee the very first time, and Doyle Brunson would say, okay, I'll give you 3 aside. And I said, okay, Dewey Tomko, I'll give you 4. Okay, Chip Reese, I'll give you 5. I said, okay, I didn't even negotiate. You know, and that first day, I think I lost like 580,000 to those guys. And then, of course, Phil Ivey, you know, we used to golf a lot back in those days. And I remember one time at Shadow Creek, I guess my grip was a mess, and I didn't have anyone who was there to help me at the time, and he did, and everyone else did. And I just didn't have a chance. Like, I couldn't get the ball in the air, and you know, I lost like $1.2 million to him in one round.
Is that the most you've ever lost in one day on the golf course?
I think so, yeah, by a little bit.
So, all right, so at the end of that, like, try to help put that into perspective. I mean, because you live a gambling lifestyle, you're betting every day. Are you just devastated to go home after losing $1.2 million? Does that set you back in any way? Or what's that really do to you psychologically?
No, it's certainly not happy, but what the first thing I typically would do is go to the range. You go, what the hell? Why can't I get the ball in the air? And I would, you know, it's obviously the great thing I love about playing golf and gambling on it is it's all on you, really. You know, in poker, you can do everything right and still lose. In golf, that's rare that's going to happen. So, you know, I would just reflect. And then ultimately, I was lucky enough to run into a guy named Christian Sanchez. And we were playing in some TV tournament, a poker TV tournament thing. And, you know, he offered to help caddy for me. And we started on a trend. I'd say at that point in my golf career, I was probably stuck about $3 million total, just no chance. And then after Christian, so there's like pre-Christian, post-Christian. After Christian, we got all that money back with a little bit of gravy and some very fun matches and some unique opportunities. He really just started from the basics. He's like, here's how you hold the club. Here's how you stand. You know, grip and posture. I was like, oh, wow. This is amazing, you know, just off that first thing. I was shocked. And of course, as anyone knows, if you've tried to adjust your grip, he had me holding the club where like, I didn't even feel like I didn't think I could hit the ball at all. And, obviously he knew what he was doing and I didn't. So I listened and trusted. And, then when we had matches and things like that, he was able to help me negotiate and say, and, you know, he would tell me, I'd say, Christian, is this a good game for me? And he'd be like, no,
You can't win. I was going to say, with poker players, that's like getting into like a pre-flop. Like the negotiations made on the tee are pretty much going to decide the outcome, I would imagine.
Oh, no question. And with Christian, see, because Christian, he's a very analytical thinker, very safe with his money. You know, he's a dad with kids. I remember one time we were at Shadow Creek and there was a ruling. Ball went in the water and it was red staked or something. And Christian said, no, you can drop right here or whatever. And the other guy, David Oppenheim, thought, no, you have to go back behind the water or something like that. And David wanted to bet me on this ruling. He's like, I'll bet you $5,000 that I'm right. And I said, Christian, how much would you bet on that? He's like, how confident are you? He's like, I'd bet $1,000. I go, let's make it $20,000. And of course, Christian was right. So we won that bet. But I remember poor Christian the first time, because we just started working together and it had only been, a week or two. And the very first time we get in a match, me and him, and he hadn't been playing much. And he's, a scratch golfer, coach, all that thing. We hadn't been playing a lot of golf. And the first time we play, we're in like a match for like $50,000 a hole. And he's playing for some of it. And he's getting a free roll on it. And I remember like the first 6-7 holes, he did not look good. He was very, very rusty and I carried the team. But that was he was afraid that, we're going to lose like $300,000 and I was going to, fire him.
Well, how does that work? So he's free rolling, meaning like you get his winnings and like you got to cover his losses as well? Or was he getting the winnings if you guys would have won? How does that work?
So let's say, for example, you're playing $50,000 a hole. Depending on the deal you make with your caddy or whatever, like he'd have a free roll. So whatever we win, he gets 5% of, right? Which, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it actually, if you win $100,000, he just makes $5,000.
Sound like a lot. I don't know if you know who you're talking to.
I mean, compare the number 5% doesn't sound like a lot, but when you know that you could win like $200,000, now he's talking about $10,000, which is real money to him.
Okay, and so that's the same way for the caddy and for the like a player that you like. If you and I were to go play, I'm not putting up that kind of cash, but you would say you would cut me like 5% of the winnings.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like I've played matches where. The partners would each put up half, but in a case like this, Christian is my ringer, my pro. So, and he's not gonna be able to afford playing for $50,000 a hole. So we set up the match and then, I give him a little bit of a free roll.
So if you and, how much golf have you played with Phil Ivey and how often do you guys, continue to play?
Well, he's back to playing now. So, he's been playing pretty much every day, but, we used to play pretty regularly, the thing about Phil, which was very frustrating and just he's such an insane gambler when it comes to craps and all these other things. Like he doesn't negotiate there, but on the golf course, I remember, can't tell you how many times like Doyle Brunson would show up. We're supposed to play at 11 a.m. and everyone's there at 11. At about 3:30, we finally go home because they couldn't agree on a match. Like they argued for 4 hours about, no, I'll give you 5.5. No, you get 5.5 in a tee spot. No, I got to tee it up from everywhere and blah, blah, blah. And it was just constant, but Phil, he was just a killer on the golf course. Like I got some Phil Ivey stories that are next level, just an absolute killer.
Well, so are you up or down on Phil Ivey in your lifetime playing golf?
Well, if you ask him, he'll say that I'm up, but I know that that's probably not true. I did go through a run. This actually happened. So Phil Ivey and I, we played him. This is at a point where both of our games were pretty even. So we played a match even. And on the first six holes, he's up three. He's up three on me. He's won the first, he has up three on six. I win 7, 8, and 9. So we're dead even after 9. Okay. Now, typically, if you gamble and you break even after 9, you don't ask for an adjustment. Okay. He's like, this game's not fair. I can't play this game. This game's not fair. I can't play this game. His caddy, Danny Dotson, who was, a big time player himself, he left. He just left after 9. He's like, nope, we're not playing this one because I started to come around a little bit. So yeah, that's what I had to deal with playing with Phil Ivey.
Is there, I mean, how do the bets work? Are you guys just throw out like on a hole by hole basis, like little, do you throw a ball down on the side, say 10,000 closest to pin? I mean, I imagine it's pretty freewheeling. Is that fair to say?
Well, Phil was different. Phil liked to play per hole because with Phil was really good. If like after 6-7 holes, he wasn't feeling it, he would just quit. Like he would try to not make matches where, you must play the 18. The matches we typically played for bigger money were Nassaus with automatic presses. So if like you're playing, a $20,000 Nassau per side, and then, they press the back typically, and then there's presses on the front and presses on the back. That was typical. And then within the game, there was always like Phil Ivey one time. This is unfair to, he's playing with a guy named Joe Cassidy and he's about 65 yards out and he just had a feeling. Okay. He's got a wedge in his hands, of course. And he's like, what can I get on this? What can I get that I make this? And Joe's like, I'll give you 200 to 1, right? Which is not nearly the right price. Like, I don't know what Tiger is from there, but I can't imagine he's much better than that with one shot without practice. So, of course, Phil says, all right, I'll bet 1,000. Hits the shot, dribble, right into the hole. Beat the guy for 200,000. Yes.
No way.
You know, poor Joe, his jaw dropped. The money was like basically all the money that he had. And, you know, he couldn't breathe after that.
Well, I was going to say, do you guys ever get in games with people that, you know, might even be better players than you are, but just don't kind of gamble at the same level that you guys do and watch them get really affected by the prices that they're playing for?
Oh, yeah. We've gambled with like some of the, I mean, we gambled with Scott Piercy back in the day at TPC Summerlin, you know, in scramble matches. And I remember, you know, one year, well, it was 2 years in a row, myself, Christian, and a couple other guys who were not very good either, short guys. But the one thing we all had in common was all four of us could putt. And we played against this group of three. Patrick Antonius was one of them, these big, strong behemoths who all hit a 370. Well, we set up a scramble match, them three versus us four. We got a tee spot. But we get four shots to their three. On average, for birdie, they were probably, you know, 10 to 12 feet, and we were 20 to 25, except they didn't putt like we could putt, and we got four putts. So I ended up winning like $1 million-plus two back-to-back years on that match. Like, we shot – one day they shot 60, you know, which is pretty good. You know, in a scramble, we shot 56.
Oh, my God.
So, like, you know, and by that point, we were playing like 150,000 a hole, because when you're talking about, you know – but you're not going to win or lose a lot of holes when you're scrambling like that. It's going to be a lot of birdies.
Is there an amount of money that you could play for that would be an uncomfortable amount?
Of course, yeah.
What is it?
I don't even know what that number is, but you know, it's been a while since we've gambled that high. Most of the super high stakes gambling on the golf course is kind of dissipated.
Why is that?
I think, well, a lot of people don't have, they lost a lot of money, right? You know, if you lose all your money on the golf course, there was a couple guys who were what we would call suckers. And when that dried up, people just didn't really want to play as high.
Well, not to keep going back to the well on Phil Ivey, but you said you had stories here. But I want to hear, there was one, I was watching some videos on YouTube, scraping what I could find. There was one that you just bet him $100,000 that you would make money on the day, like from somebody else. You had a side bet with him. Do you remember this?
I don't.
It was something about, it's like a 2000.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
that I just bet that I would win.
Yes. So you made like 50K in the match or something like that, but then you also won 100K from Phil, who wasn't even there to bet.
Oh, yeah, he wasn't even there. There was another bet that I made. One night we were at like this, you know, we were having some sake and some beers, and we were talking about, and my golf game was not very good. Like, the back tees at TPC Summerlin is about 7,000 yards. I can't hit a driver more than 230, so I don't hit any of the greens from the back there, but I bet them. If they gave me a year that I could shoot 80 from the back tees there. So I'm drunk and we're all drinking and I bet $550,000 on this. And so I have a month to spare, but I get as many rounds as I need. So with about a month to spare, you know, I go out there and I'm like, all right, 110, 108, 106. Okay, that's my first three rounds.
That's what you're starting at. And you had to break 80.
And I have a month. So we woke up at 7 a.m. every day. We practiced for an hour, played 18, practiced for another hour, played another 18, played nine more, and then practiced again. So I would go from 7 a.m. till about 8 p.m. every day. And for, you know, within about a week, I was shooting low 90s, you know, maybe a week later, you know, mid to high 80s. And with about a week and a half to spare, actually, I was two under after nine. And so then all the carts started coming out because they were like, oh boy, here he comes. There was probably 60 golf carts on the last three holes sweating me. And so in the last three holes, I needed to go bogey, bogey, bogey to win the bet. And there was the three toughest holes also, just the way that it's set up. And of course, you know, on the first one is the easiest of the three. So I, of course, double bogey that. Mm. Now I need to par one of the last two. And I make par on the second to last one. And then I have a 6-footer for all the money to win. I'm actually a good putter. But this putt, I hit the putt. And as I hit the putt, my knees sort of kind of fell to the ground in a way. But somehow the ball went in. And I made it.
That's enough to get you nervous then. 550K. I think we might have at least answered the question at least a little bit on what makes you nervous.
It was also too just the way that it came down. Like, yeah. The last two holes, like, I hit basically, my strategy was driver, three wood, you know, because I couldn't hit the greens, just get close, chip and putt. And I was pretty good at the chipping and putting part. And like the last, and I hit a good drive, good three wood, and all the pressure and everybody around, I just shanked my chip and like hit it way long. So I've got like a basically 60, 70 yard or foot, like two putt, which is brutal. You know, I lifted 6 feet past the hole, had to make a comeback around back to back holes to finish. But that was probably the pinnacle of, you know, of achievement as far as golf, because we really worked hard. I mean, I'm not, no joke. We like spent 12 hours on the course every day. That's
I love, like, you guys make all these bets are kind of reckless to begin with, and then actually like dedicate yourself to it, to actually accomplishing it. But what, so who are, I guess, some of the best poker players, who are the best golfers out of the poker players, and who is actually good at, like, from what I gather, watching you guys play poker and stuff like that, you guys shit talk each other pretty well at that level. Who's the best shit talker on the actual golf course?
Well, the best shit talker, and this would surprise people, is Phil Ivey.
Yeah.
Like I said, he's ruthless out there. One time, this is just so Phil Ivey. Like, he used to like to get under his opponent's skin and get them off and make them uncomfortable. There was a time where he's on 18 and he's got like a lot of money on this putt against Mike Sexton and all these people. It's like huge for all the matches, all the marbles. It's about a 20 footer. Okay. He asks his caddy, he says, what does it do? He's like, the caddy looks at it. He says, it's dead straight, Phil. He's like, dead straight. He's like, yeah, it's dead straight. He's like, are you sure? And the caddy's like, yeah, it's dead straight.
I would not want to be that caddy.
Right. Well, Phil hits the putt and the putt is tracking pretty dead straight. But at the last minute, like right when it's getting to the hole, it fades to the left. And it hits the lip, but then it drops in. So he makes the putt. He wins all the money. First thing he looks at his caddy, and he goes, dead straight, huh? He's like, Phil, you made the putt. He's like, that's not the point. I'm playing for a lot of money out here. You said it was dead straight. And he started yelling and screaming at his caddy as he's collecting all the money from the opponents who are just dejected and have to listen to this spoiled brat yell at his caddy. And his caddy's like, what in the world just happened? Like, you made the putt, Phil. And then I saw him as he walked to his car and he's just grinning ear to ear.
Just messing with the caddy then?
100%. Messing with the caddy, but doing it in front of everyone else to upset them even more.
How's your shit talking game?
Well, with Phil, it's pretty good, but you know.
How do you get under his skin? What do you say to him?
Well, none of it is like PG or whatever, because like,
this is a non-PG podcast. You're totally fine.
So this is like, oh my God, like not PC at all. Like we go super, like he's like, we just go with stuff that like is not okay in 2019. We go extremely racial, right? I'm the little white guy. Like he's like, I one time I was like, man, you should be embarrassed losing to a little white boy like me, you know, like just stuff like that. And we would needle each other in that way.
Do you guys pay? How do you guys pay out? Do you pay cash? Is it like, does Venmo even work for those numbers? Or you just keep a tally? Oh, or how's that work?
Well, nobody Venmos. Like we don't Venmo those kind of sums. Typically what we do is like, nobody brings that kind of money to the golf course. So a lot of times what you see is people golf and then they go to the poker room later. And most people have, you know, an account there or chips there. So basically you lose 150,000, you just give them like 150,000 in Bellagio chips and just throw them at them. Although one time I did get paid at the golf course when I won that million bet, and the guy brought like, I beat him for like 700,000 and he just gave me like $25,000 Bellagio chips.
I know you mentioned Scott Piercy. Are there any other pros in the Vegas game that you ever play games with?
Well, he was the only like official pro that would, you know, he would practice at Summerlin a lot of time and get involved in some, you know, scrambles late, at, you know, because it doesn't get dark in Vegas till like 8. So sometimes he'd be out there practicing and, you know, we'd get him in there. But other than that, no PGA pros. I know that, you know, there's others like John Daly and Joe Pesci and whoever who would gamble, but I never crossed paths with those guys on the course anyway.
How does the poker like season work? I mean, are there times of the year where you're kind of taking downtime from poker? And kind of for those that aren't familiar, like explain like what has all happened with online poker and all that in that world in the last few years.
Yeah, so I do the majority of my play in one stretch in June, in the middle of like in a 6-week period from June to middle of July. I do a daily vlog every day on YouTube, kind of tracking my results throughout and stuff, and make sort of like a TV series out of it. And that's where I spend every day playing. And outside of that, very little. It's the World Series of Poker, which happens here in Las Vegas. Outside of that, there are events and there are tournaments. I will be going to play one later this year in Rosvadov. As for online poker, depending where you live, there are some legal places now that you can play online poker. Las Vegas is one of them. You can also play in New Jersey, I believe Delaware, Pennsylvania. Legislation is slowly coming around, very slowly, because politicians just they don't really get it. Like they don't understand why poker is different. But with sports getting legalized across the country, there's a little bit more hope that we'll see, you know, online poker more at a, you know, sort of a level where everyone in the country can play.
I'm curious to your thoughts. Do you consider poker, and this might sound like a dumb question to those listening at home, but do you consider poker gambling?
It can be. For example, if you played poker with me, you'd be gambling. I'd be working.
Correct.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, yes, I would consider it a form of gambling, but it is one of the few forms of gambling where you can actually get an edge. You can't go into a casino unless you're cheating and play roulette and win. You're going to, I mean, you can win sometimes, but you're not going to win in the long run. Poker and sports betting and, you know, horses and all that, those are a few of the areas where, if you're smart enough, blackjack as well, where you can actually, you know, win money.
Do you like to play other games in the casino other than poker?
No, I knew that when I moved to Las Vegas, and I obviously didn't have a lot of money when I first did, this it was super important for me to avoid the pitfalls and the traps of the pit and like winning my money in poker and then losing it all in the pit. So I made a rule where like I just wouldn't play at all. Now that I'm, you know, older and more, you know, I don't have a gambling problem and I've got a little more. If friends come to town, they want to play a little blackjack or craps, I will, you know, here and there. But it's not that fun for me. Like for me, I look at it like, you know, gambling's fun when I can win, or at least I have, you know, positive equity. When I know I'm just like donating money, it feels stupid. So I don't enjoy it that much.
And that's what I feel like I was trying to explain to my parents back in my poker playing days. I'm like, Mom, it's not gambling. I know what I'm doing. I'm actually skilled at it. But there is a difference, I think, in kind of the way, like, you have a considerable advantage when you sit down at a poker player because you're playing against other people and not playing against a house.
Yeah. The best way you can describe this to your mother next time she asks is when you play against the casino, like you play roulette, you're playing against the casino.
Yeah.
The casino doesn't lose. When I play poker, I'm playing against other people. The casino's just charging me rent. The casino's just charging me rent to sit in the seat, and I get to play against people who are less intelligent at the game than I am.
How what's your home setup look like from a golf perspective? I've seen some videos and some pictures that you seem to have quite the home setup.
I do. I have inside the house, I have a full swing golf, which has, you know, that you can hit driver in there. You hit it just like you would see it when you go to a golf shop and, you know, you're trying out new clubs. I've also got two monitors where you can like dissect the swing. You can also, I don't do this very often, but you can like play like anything from 50 to 60 different courses on there. Anything from, you know, TPC Sawgrass to Pebble Beach or whatever. And then in the backyard, I have a pretty large 6-hole putting green with a bunker. And, you know, I mostly use it to chip. I don't really putt on there very much. And you can probably chip maybe 35, 40 yards, in the backyard there. So that's the golf setup I got, you know, at the house, it seems. And then I don't live too far from the golf course anyway.
What is it, Summerlin that you play at almost entirely?
Yeah, pretty exclusively TPC Summerlin. You know, occasionally, you know, we'll do it. I did a tournament. I did that American Century Championship in Lake Tahoe a few years ago. And it was a lot of fun. Got to play with a lot of pretty cool people in that one.
So what's a day like today? We're recording this on a Monday afternoon. What's a day in the life look like for you? Like, will you play poker at all today? I guess you're outside that window that we just talked about, but how often will you go sometimes between playing poker?
I go really long stretches now. I mean, when I was younger, I played pretty much every day, but you know, now that I've established, I have money, I don't need to. Like right now, I go to the gym at noon, done at 2 o'clock, do a podcast with you. You know, I got my TV set up at the house with an 88 inch and 240s on top. I'm a big hockey guy, so I'll study that. Maybe I'll go in the backyard, hit a little bit. When it gets a little cooler, maybe around 3-4 o'clock, might hit to the course, play a little bit. But as far as poker goes, this whole month of August, I probably won't play at all. I probably won't play again until October, actually.
So I imagine you get asked about Phil Ivey a lot, but you said you hinted that you got some good stories. I don't know if you were hinting at more golf stories that you have on him, or what's kind of your go-to Phil Ivey story then?
Yeah, well, I gave you a few of them. My favorite is the one where he, you know, was on 18 and yelled at his caddy. But yeah, he's
is he a good golf? Like, what's his game like?
So he's a guy that's determined. And, you know, he works hard when he works hard. And there was a point where from 100 yards in, he was pretty deadly. He's very technical and mechanical, and like he needs help. Like, he's always getting help. He's always got somebody helping him and working with him. And I'm the same. Like, I don't hit a golf ball typically without Christian there, because I found that when you're gambling on golf, if you don't have anyone there and your swing falls apart and you've committed to 18 holes, you're dead. And I've experienced that. So with Christian, he can just tell me, he's like, oh, you know what? You know, you need to finish. You're not finishing the swing. Or he's like, you're coming in flat. I'm like, oh, okay. So I can make the adjustment because he sees stuff. And so Phil Ivey will do that. But his golf game, I would say at his peak, I would say he was probably around an 8 or 9 in that neighborhood, based on his short game alone, because his short game, you know, he's from 100 yards in, he was pretty good.
I want to know some more about, like, maybe really random bets you've made in your life. Whether I hear stories about poker players, you'll say, I'll bet you, you know, $1 million, I can lose 20 pounds by the end of next month and stuff like that. What's something, it doesn't have to be golf related, something really random that you found yourself betting on at some point?
So for me personally, it was about the year 2000, I want to say. And I was sitting at a poker game with a guy named Ted Forrest, who's, you know, a prolific player. And I was about 135 pounds at the time, you know, pretty skinny kid. And we were just talking about weight bets and all this stuff. And I said, I'll never weigh 170 pounds in my life. There's just no way. And he's like, I'll bet you that you will. And I was, he's like, I'll lay you, he says, I said, I'll lay you 20 to, I laid him 20 to one that I would never weigh 170 pounds. And so he threw me a $1,000 chip, because otherwise it makes no sense. Like, he's got to pay up front. He threw me a $1,000 chip, and I became a vegetarian the next day. And then I went vegan like a year later. So the bet looked pretty locked up. But about like 6 or 7 years ago, I started to go to the gym, right? And I started to add some muscle, and I started to put on some bulk, and I'm like, uh-oh, I see 165 on that scale right now. And then, you know, and then one day, I mean, I kept gaining some muscle and a little bit extra, you know, a little tire around the belly. And I weighed in at one, and I, you know, this is all on honor. It's like, he doesn't check my weight every day. And I looked, and it said 170.9. So, yeah, the next day I had to give him his $1,000 back plus 20,000 more.
Was there a shelf life on that? Was at any point in your life if you got to 170?
Yeah, any point. So that's how he, because people go, well, how do you ever get paid? He's like, well, he pays up front. And then if he ever wins the bet, then, and we're both still alive, like, you know, I would pay him the rest of it.
What, do you ever travel and play golf in any other places outside of Vegas? And where have some of the highlights of some places you've been?
No, really. I've sort of like become a master at the TPC Summerlin Greens.
You,
like,
you know that
if anyone needs a caddy, like, Christian actually believes this. Like, he's not kidding. He's like, he thinks that when the pro players come and play that course, you know, once a year, he's like, he thinks I'm a better putter than most of them on those greens, just because we know them so well. And, you know, that's our home course. We don't travel too much. Like I said, the funnest trip I had was Edgewood, you know, and I remember that year I played, I looked at Michael Jordan's score from the year before. And my goal was just to beat his score. And I was able to do that. I shot like an 82 with 23 putts. I had 23 putts on the round. Got to play with some cool people, Wayne Gretzky, Bill Laimbeer, you know, Jason Kidd. And it was really, really fun for me to, you know, be a part of that thing.
Any run-ins with Charles Barkley at all in the golf course?
Yes. Oh my God. It's sad. It's just, isn't it sad? Like, he was playing that day in the Edgewood, and he was like right behind us. And like, he gave up so much that he started just swinging the club with one arm.
Ugh.
Like, he just used one hand, because he has, you know, if you haven't seen it, you know, YouTube it and check it out. The Charles Barkley yip. It's fascinating, because apparently before he got this yip, like, he was like a 10 or a 12 yeah. handicap. You know, now he couldn't possibly break 150.
I was gonna say, yeah, there's old videos of him playing with MJ where he swings it free and clear, and it is tough. It's really tough to watch. Do you dabble much in sports betting?
I do hockey. Okay. Yeah, I'm you know, like, last year, actually had a losing year last year for the first year ever. It was a weird one. There was a lot of weird stuff that happened. But yeah, I plan to fire it up again this year, and mostly betting on underdogs.
I was going to say, are you really colors. Analytical when it comes to that? I mean, I imagine there's so much math and that goes into poker and calculating odds and whatnot. I know that's just one element of it, but are you really analytical when you do any other betting outside of the poker table?
I would say yes, that I am, but I could still be even more so. Like, I still have a little bit of like the old school feel, which is really kind of outdated. And, you know, you shouldn't gamble that way. You should just gamble based on the numbers and stuff like that. And I think this season I'm going to work a little harder on me. I do most of my work for the hockey season in August and September, and kind of study what I expect the teams to do. And then typically, you know, if there's teams that I think will be underrated, I try to bet on them more so, and vice versa.
Yeah, I saw you tweeting out some hockey rosters. I was curious as to what the reasoning was behind that. What is, all right, so if you're giving, let's say, like, a novice, a true novice at poker, and then like a somewhat skilled player, what kind of lessons, just off the top of your head, would you give to like a really extremely novice player and somebody that at least has been around a table?
Okay, well, this is going to sound like a plug because, I mean, it is, I guess, a plug, but it's also true.
Masterclass, I can already guess. Yes.
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, I did a masterclass, which is awesome because they do, like, really incredible work with all kinds of, like, people that are experts in their field. You know, Serena Williams teaches tennis. Steph Curry teaches basketball. Usher teaches performance, and I teach poker, right? So it's a class that's – I think it's, like, if you get, like, my course, it's, like, $80-$90. And then if you get the whole pass, you can watch all their stuff, like – well, you know, you learn cooking from Gordon Ramsay and the list goes on and on. But as far as an actual poker tip I can give you, it's simply this. Just learn the fundamentals, which is like, you know, what hands are good and what hands you shouldn't be playing, right? So you want to play a lot. Like, you shouldn't be playing typically more than 30% of the hands dealt. Like, that's pretty loose already. You want to, like, come in there with pretty strong hands. And the other thing is, for a lot of the beginners, I would say is, like, if you like your hand, don't just call the bet. Raise the bet. Be aggressive. Take the initiative. Be the one that takes the lead. And the third secret little tip that I would give players that are, because this is the typical mistake that a lot of, like, novices make when they play against a pro or somebody good, they think, oh my God, this pro must be bluffing me all the time. Probably not. Pros probably just have it. So you probably shouldn't just, like, when they bet a lot of their chips, you know, when it's all said and done, they probably have a really strong hand. So, you know, you can usually fold pretty safely.
Let's say the worst thing you probably do is watch on television and feel like you know a player's habits because they're showing the highlights on television. And they're not, you know, if you're folding 20 straight hands, they're not showing that mixed in. You know, they're going to show you with a real nice bluff or when you've got the big hands, I would imagine.
Yeah, when you watch the edited shows. Now poker sort of evolves. Edited shows still happen, but there's a lot of opportunity now to watch live. So you can watch on a 30-minute delay and you see all the hands, mm-hmm. which gives you a sense of, like, wow, you know, when you watch it on TV, like you said, you say, like, how come they always have good hands? Because they're only showing those ones.
Right.
You know, they're not showing the mundane ones where a guy with queen nine raises and everybody folds. Like, you're not seeing all the nitty gritty stuff unless you're watching it live.
A couple more here and I'll let you get out of here. Explain to me why players at your level in poker will arrive late to tournaments. I've always been really curious on that.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because that's been a topic of conversation recently in the poker world on Twitter. And the reason you do it is one of the first reasons is you're already in another event. So let's say I played an event and I'm still in, you know, and I get knocked out and it's like 4 o'clock and another tournament started at 2 o'clock. Okay, well, I'll look at it and see, I'll jump in, right? The other one is, you know, sometimes you look at the early levels and you think, okay, I got other things to do. I want to be more well rested for the later stages. And I don't think that the early levels mean that much. So you might, you know, show up later. For me, for example, during the World Series, I'm playing often 12 to 14 hour days. So that's taxing on the mind and the body. Mm-hmm. So let's say, you know, 3 weeks in, if the tournament starts at 3 o'clock, I may just decide, you know, just relax a little bit and show up at around 7 o'clock. That doesn't give you an advantage because, you know, theoretically you show up on time, you have a better chance to build chips, but we're human and there's only so many hours in a day that you can devote. So, a lot of times guys might be playing in another cash game. Mm-hmm. They might just be playing in a side game that, you know, they figure the early levels, they can make more money in that and show up a little bit later and still be okay.
What's the worst beat you've ever had on a golf course? I imagine hopefully it's not worse than Phil Ivey holding out from the fairway at 65-1, but what's the worst beat you could think of?
You know what's so great, and I'm so proud to say this, that I remember vividly, and this is so backwards in terms of what the human mind usually does. I remember the good moments mm-hmm. more so than the bad. I think my worst day of golf was just the way that Phil Ivey looked at me too. Cause, like, we're playing at Shadow Creek and I had no chance, you know, and it was like the fifth or sixth hole. And he's just like, it was just depressing and demoralizing because this was pre-Christian, right? Like PC.
PC.
And so once, you know, like, I didn't know what was wrong with my swing and I was just like, I couldn't make an eight. You know what I mean? I just couldn't make an eight. And he's just like, he's making bogey and double bogey and just beating me every hole. And, like, we had an agreement where, you know, at that time we had to play the full 18. So there was just nothing I could do. It was very helpless feeling. I wouldn't call it a beat. It was more just like, I don't know if any other golfers have ever been through quite something like that where you're gambling for that kind of money and you cannot quit. And you just know that you're just going to lose, like, every hole, another 20,000, another 100,000 or whatever the case may be.
All right, last one. This doesn't necessarily have to be golf related. Maybe. I'm not sure if he's a golfer at all. What's your best or your favorite Phil Hellmuth story?
My favorite Phil Hellmuth story. Oh, man. Jeez.
Does he play golf?
He does. He plays golf and he thinks he's better one-handed. So we were playing and it was actually a decently sized match. He doesn't play quite as whole. It might have been like $5,000 or something like that. And he's on a, like, scramble and he's playing with these other guys and he's like, they're on 18 or whatever. And he'd been putting with two hands like the whole time. And then he decided that, you know, it was a sign that something had to be, that he needed to putt this with just one hand. And everyone's like, okay, Phil, what the hell? You know, they're like annoyed because he's got partners, right? And they're like, what are you doing? You know, this is our money on the line as well. But, you know, you're not going to convince Phil Hellmuth. And it's like a 20 footer and it's hard to even get it there with one hand. And somehow Phil Hellmuth randomly just like decides to putt with one hand, knocks it in, no problem.
Well, I lied because I do have one final question. What if you're of all the professional poker players, if you had to pick a teammate for a match today, who's the partner you would want most want on your team?
Hoo-wee, poker player for a match. Well, I'm going to go with Phil Ivey just because I know the match that I'll be in will be good because I'll let him do all the negotiating for us.
That's awesome. All right, Daniel, thanks so much, man, for the time. This has been a lot of fun, a little different flavor for us, but we've been dying to hear some gambling stories from Vegas as well as some poker ones as well. So thanks for taking the time.
Oh, anytime, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Cheers.
See ya.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect